Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1961 with a release date of Friday, April 17th, 2015 to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. The IARU monitoring service identifies new intruders into the ham radio bands. A geomagnetic storm sparks auroras over Canada and the United States. Australia may soon take ham radio into space. An unlicensed broadcaster in Kentucky hit with a $15,000 fine. And you may be surprised to learn what causes ham radio its worst interference. Find out right here on Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1961, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now reporting from Mississippi, here is Don Wilbanks, AE5DW.
The latest International Amateur Radio Union Monitoring Service newsletter prepared by Wolfgang Hedel, DK2OM, is now available for free download. There's lots of news concerning intruders into the ham bands as we hear from Amateur Radio Newsline Stephen Kenford, N8WB.
Among the items covered in this latest issue are the Russian channel markers that have shown up in the amateur radio high-frequency bands. One of these is on 3.756 kHz from TWAPS on the northeast shore of the Black Sea. Its signal is audible every evening, with the actual transmission mode being A3E, which means it puts out a carrier and both sidebands modulated by short tone bursts, which are called pip tones, called master and slave. Earlier reports had pegged its location as being in the Ukraine, but those proved to be inaccurate. Another intruder reported was Radio Air Atria, which appeared on 7.175 MHz with very strong signals in Europe, but with a rather unstable carrier. Also, that an Australian over-the-horizon radar has been heard operating daily on 21.295 MHz using different sweep rates. As the newsletter went to publication, the monitoring service indicated that Radio Hargeisa in Somalia was still transmitting on 7.120 MHz, while the Voice of Iran on 7.200 MHz was also audible on 7.195.5 during the afternoon. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinfort at AWB in Wadsworth, Ohio.
There's a lot more to this report, and you can find it in PDF format at tinyurl.com/iarums-spring-05. The ARRL reports that the sponsors of the 2015 Global Amateur Radio Emergency Conference, or GARIC 2015, have announced that the event has been canceled due to a lack of interest. Seppo Sisato, OH1VR, said that GARIC 2015 registrations were too few and the decision was largely financial. GARIC was set to mark its 10th anniversary this June in Tampere, Finland, where the first GARIC was held. A G2-class geomagnetic storm erupted on Friday, April 10th, spawning Aurora Borealis across the Canadian border into the United States, where these northern lights were photographed as far south as Colorado. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather Emby, KB3TZD, has more.
At the time the alert was issued, solar storm conditions were still underway, with the possibility for more to come. This most likely when a predicted coronal mass ejection arrived at our home planet later that day. On Sunday the 12th, forecasters at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration boosted the odds of an M-class solar flare to 40%. The reason given was a large and potentially active sunspot region that was emerging over the sun's northeastern limb, and it was turning towards Earth. Reaching out more than 120,000 kilometers from end to end, the sunspot group had several dark cores as large as our planet. Of greatest interest was and is the region's potential for flares. Part of the group is sunspot AR2321. It was described as having an unstable beta-gamma-delta magnetic field that harbors energy that could lead to strong eruptions. NOAA forecasters had estimated a 55% chance of M-class flares and a 20% chance of X-class flares from it. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD, in Berwick, Pennsylvania.
Solar observers suggested that those in need of updates visit spaceweather.com. Also, be sure to watch the weekly Ham Radio Solar Forecast, produced by Dr. Tamitha Scove, for the program Ham Nation. It airs live every Wednesday night between 9 and 10 p.m. Eastern at live.twit.tv. The Ham Nation podcast replays are available about 24 hours later at twit.tv/HN. You can watch Dr. Scove's reports at spaceweather.tv and be sure to follow her on Twitter at Tamitha Scove. United Kingdom telecommunications regulator Ofcom has announced its decision to extend Recognized Spectrum Access, or RSA, to new bands that are intended to promote more efficient use of available band space. An RSA is a means for Ofcom to take into account, within national spectrum planning, the use of frequencies used for the reception of services that do not need to be licensed. In this instance, it relates to receive-only Earth stations, which are ground-based terminals used to receive signals from meteorological satellites, Earth exploration satellites, and space missions, but that do not transmit. The document explains why Ofcom decided to make RSA for receive-only Earth stations available in two additional frequency bands from 7850 to 7900 megahertz and 25.5 to 26.5 gigahertz. It also includes a consultation on draft regulations that Ofcom proposes to make in order to enforce its policy decisions. The Australian Communications and Media Authority, or ACMA, is seeking comment on a proposal to remake the amateur radio communications license conditions and the class of license, this to enable overseas amateurs visiting Australia to operate in that nation. At the same time, but as a separate issue, the ACMA is proposing to restrict access to two segments in 3.3 to 3.6 gigahertz in the 9-centimeter band for advanced licensees, where spectrum access may be required by the National Broadband Network. 3400 to 3410 megahertz is allocated to the amateur satellite service in International Telecommunications Union Regions 2 and 3. It's also used by amateurs in many countries around the world for weak signal communications, including moon bounce operations. The space race may be heating up down under, and it could include a spot for amateur radio. Graham Kemp, VK4BB of the WIA News, has the details.
A group of enthusiasts plan to launch a 100% locally built balloon. It's a balloon-carried glider in outback Queensland. This is a possible forerunner to getting the country back in space. Australia once had space launches from Woomera in South Australia, and over the years there's been talk of other launch sites, but nothing appears to have happened. However, Project Thunderstruck, headed by father and son Robert Brand, VK2URB, and Jason, VK2FJAB, has an ambitious venture that promises to see a glider lifted by a balloon to an altitude of 45 kilometres, and this from Longreach in September. From there, the glider will free fall, reaching supersonic speed for a short time. The Phase 1 balloon and glider flights are to be recorded by telemetry and cameras. Robert, VK2URB, admits he's too busy to play amateur radio, leaving an option of somebody else to use the balloon's 2 kilogram capacity that's big enough for a small repeater or similar package. A suitable ham package for each phase of the Thunderstruck project is now being sought. In 6 or 7 years, the knowledge gained through Thunderstruck may lead to the launch of CubeSats carrying amateur radio to the planet Mars. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Graham Kemp, VK4BB of the WIA News in Australia.
More can be read on the website, www.projectthunderstruck.org. Recent work by New Zealand's telecommunications regulator Radio Spectrum Management has shown a need for good radio frequency engineering practices to be employed at ports. This following an investigation of interference on container loader drivers' radio systems. Radio Spectrum Management traced the interference to newly installed high-power transmitters that were causing front-end overload of the port's radio equipment. The movement of containers is critical for efficient and safe port operations. Some ports use a wireless location system for containers using short-range devices authorized by a general user radio license. In making the choice to use such a system, operators must take into account the shared nature of the license and that no regulatory protection is given from the interfering effects of other radio services. VE3LYC says that he's planning to activate Melville Island sometime between August 3rd and 10th, but the exact dates have not yet been announced. Melville Island lies in the eastern Timor Sea off the coast of Australia's Northern Territory. It's west of the Cobourg Peninsula and north of Darwin with a tropical climate. According to a report in the Ohio Penn DX newsletter, VE3LYC says that landing permission and logistics have been granted. Full details will be announced in the near future on a dedicated webpage to be created for this operation. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the 16 repeaters of the Peak Radio Association, serving Western Oregon's My513Net. Another unlicensed broadcaster has been hit with a good-sized fine. Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, is in the newsroom with more.
The FCC has imposed a penalty of $15,000 against Jose Alejandro Aguilar, this for his alleged operation of an unlicensed radio station on the frequencies of 87.5 and 99.5 megahertz in the Louisville, Kentucky area. The commission says that it had previously warned Aguilar in writing that such operations were illegal. On April 29th of 2014, the Enforcement Bureau Chicago office issued a notice of apparent liability for forfeiture in the amount of $15,000 to Aguilar. This is for what it termed as his willful and repeated violation of Section 301 of the Communications Act by operating such an unlicensed radio transmitter. The commission said that Aguilar had not filed a response to the notice, so, based on the information it already had at hand, that it affirmed the proposed forfeiture. In its decision, the FCC noted that Aguilar ignored the commission's previous warnings. It said that this demonstrates deliberate disregard for the regulatory agency's authority and its rules, warranting such a significant penalty. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, in Los Angeles.
Aguilar was given the customary 30 calendar days after the release date of the forfeiture order on April 9th to pay it in full. If he fails to do so within the period specified, the case may be referred to the U.S. Department of Justice for further enforcement. Bill Boswick, VE4BOZ, who is a Radio Amateurs of Canada certified emergency coordinator, says that he's received questions from the field relating to ICS, or Incident Command System, training. According to Boswick, Canada uses an emergency management operations doctrine based on the European military staff system and widely accepted by municipalities and governments for emergency management. One of its benefits is that it provides a common language that can be used in planning, operations, communications, and other aspects of emergency response. This minimizes confusion during intense activities involving many jurisdictions. ARES, under direction from their respective Canadian section managers, offer support by providing a backup communications capability for a municipal emergency management team, and that some of these or other served agencies do use ICS. Where that exists, there could be a request that ARES radio operators be trained at least to the ICS level 100 or 200 in order to be familiar with the concepts. Boswick notes that Radio Amateurs of Canada does not have the resources, nor is it structured, to offer in-house incident command structure training. However, there is a detailed description of it and where training may be located across Canada. You'll find that in cyberspace at www.icscanada.ca. This for our listeners in the United Kingdom. As of its June issue, the Radio Society of Great Britain's new starters newsletter will be known as RADCOM Basics. The newsletter is available to all RSGB members, not just newcomers. Articles planned for the June edition include Making the Most of 10 MHz, Understanding Software-Defined Radio, and What is Summits on the Air? RSGB members can sign up for the newsletter at tinyurl.com/radcom-basics. Morse code enthusiasts might want to mark down the weekend of May 1st to the 3rd in Reno, Nevada. That's because the first West Coast CW Enthusiast Confab is being held in conjunction with the ARRL Nevada State Convention, also known as NVCON 2015. Some of the highlights of the confab will be seminars by Tom Terramina, K5RC, titled CW, You're Missing Fun on the Air. Free DBs, The World of Wire Antennas, and Field Day, The Gateway to Live Contesting, both presented by Hank Gerritsen, W6SX. There will also be a CW Enthusiast Italian Buffet Dinner. CW-only special event on-site station K7RC will be on the air Saturday to allow for operating the 7QP contest. More information is online at nvcon.org/events/CW. The 200th entry for this year's International Lighthouse and Lightship Weekend has gone to the United States Point Furman Lighthouse in California that the United States Coast Guard Auxiliary will put on the air as W6A. The square cylindrical wood tower rising from a two-story wood Italianate Victorian keeper's house has a very interesting history. It was built in 1874 of lumber from California redwoods. In 1941, it was extinguished due to the Pearl Harbor bombing amid fears that the light would serve as a beacon for enemy planes and ships. It was restored in 2002 at a cost of $2.6 million, is on the National Register of Historic Places, and is open to the public. Point Furman takes the number of confirmed United States entries in the 2015 International Lighthouse and Lightship Weekend to 23. There are more than 200 from almost two dozen countries, with 4 months to the event scheduled to be held on August 15th and 16th. A dedicated website with an online registration form is at www.illw.net. The joint Tucson Amateur Packet Radio and AMSAT Hamvention Banquet will be on May 15th in the Jefferson Room of the Kohler Presidential Banquet Center in Kettering, Ohio. This year's featured speaker will be Michael Osman, AD0NR, who will discuss his Adventures of a Hacker Turned Ham. The AMSAT News Service describes Osman as someone who grew up as a computer nerd embracing the hacker ethos. Eventually, he became very interested in the security of wireless systems, such as remote keyless entry, garage door openers, Wi-Fi, and Bluetooth. He designed Ubertooth One, a Bluetooth sniffer that was successfully funded on Kickstarter. Tickets to this event are available online only at tinyurl.com/AMSAT-tapper-dinner-tickets. None will be sold at the door. Some names in the news. The annual Wireless Innovation Forum International Achievement Award has been won by Matt Ettis into MJI. Through his company, Ettis Research, which is now a part of National Instruments, Ettis has been an influential driver of innovation in the software-defined radio community. He released the first Universal Software Radio Peripheral, or USRP, in January of 2005 with GNU Radio software support. GNU is a Unix-like operating system that is free to users. The Wireless Innovation Forum is a nonprofit international industry association dedicated to driving the future of radio communications and systems worldwide. Its Forum International Achievement Award is presented to an individual, group of individuals, or organization that made especially significant contributions to international furtherance or acceptance of software-defined or cognitive radio. Tom Medlin, W5KUB, has expanded his Tuesday night amateur radio roundtable video webcast on W5KUB.com to include simulcasting on shortwave radio over station WTWW on 9930 kilohertz. WTWW is a 100 kilowatt international broadcaster located in Lebanon, Tennessee. As of April 7th, it began carrying the audio of the W5KUB webcast on Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Central Time in the United States, which is 0100 UTC on Wednesday. Shortwave listeners have the option to go to W5KUB.com and join in on the video webcast and chat room. And since many hams got their start in shortwave listening, Tom plans to add a shortwave segment to the show. To watch Amateur Radio Roundtable, go to W5KUB.com and click on Live Events. To join the chat room, use your pre-registered username and password. If you don't have one, just enter your call or name, leave the password blank, and click Sign In. Those listening on WTWW are asked to give their location and signal report if they sign into the chat. Tim Peake, KG5BVI, the first British European Space Agency astronaut, has issued an invitation to United Kingdom school pupils to contact him via amateur radio while he's in space. Peake will launch to the International Space Station in November and will spend 6 months working and living on the ISS. UK school pupils will be able to contact him while he's on board via a scheduled amateur radio link-up. Schools throughout the United Kingdom are being invited to host one of a limited number of those in-flight calls, which will include space workshops. Art Bell, W6OBB, has announced via Facebook and his website that he will be back on the Internet airwaves this summer. According to Bell, his new show is called Midnight in the Desert and will premiere in late July. Bell says that Midnight in the Desert will run from 9 p.m. to 12 a.m. Pacific Time Monday through Friday. Also, that it will be available worldwide on the Internet in 64 kilobytes per second stereo via TuneIn. He says that TuneIn has a free app available for download right now. For updates on Art's new show, you might want to visit his webpage, artbell.com, or sign up to his page on Facebook. This is Ham Radio News for today's Radio Amateur. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following Radio Amateur. Every ham suffers from interference now and then, but most have no idea where it may be coming from. Well, there's an expert on this subject, and as Gary Pierce, KN4AQ, learned, his name is Ed Hare, and his call is W1RFI, and he can be found in Newington, Connecticut, at the American Radio Relay League.
What's the most common source of RF interference plaguing radio amateurs today? Before you say power line noise, listen to Ed Hare, W1RFI's answer, from my recent interview with Ed on Ham Radio Now.
Probably the most common source of noise now, more than power line noise, is switching mode power supplies. They're in absolutely everything we buy. The old days of those iron transformers are gone. Every single one of these is a switcher. We're also seeing noise from pulse with control motors.
So, and switching power supplies, we're talking about those little wall warts.
Little wall warts, right? Exactly.
We're not talking about MFJ and Astron.
No, those are usually pretty well filtered. I mean, they have to.
The little wall wart thing that is powering everything in your house.
Right. Every TV you own has a built-in switcher. Almost every device has a wall wart. And a lot of these are imported, not necessarily meeting the FCC rules. So we're seeing more reports involving those.
Ed is ARRL's lab manager, but his call sign, W1RFI, gives away one of his passions. He told me that a few of the LED bulbs that are becoming more common in household lighting are also noise generators, as are grow lights used for indoor plants and agriculture. He said that the ARL lab can work with manufacturers to correct these problems, but
we need those model numbers. We need specific information about the problems the amateurs are having so that we can put some of our resources toward helping.
Hams with RF interference problems can contact the ARRL's lab by calling headquarters or by sending email to rfi@arrl.org. Reporting for Newsline from the Ham Radio Now studios, I'm Gary Pierce, KN4AQ.
A lot more on the subject with Etta Hare, W1RFI, is at hamradionow.tv. Just click on episode number 196. Ukraine Today reports that Tomas Brol, SP9UOB, launched a high-altitude balloon to capture video of the solar eclipse that took place back on Friday, March 20th. In the article, SP9UOB called this a successful experiment. He said that he was able to pick up a signal from the balloon and then showed live internet information giving its position and altitude. To make the balloon flight more interactive, a radio signal tracing its path was made available so that amateurs worldwide could track its position. The capsule carrying the cameras was equipped with a GPS and APRS transmitter to find the devices later. After descent, the SP9UOB electronics package landed some 80 kilometers from Gliwice, Poland. This was a total solar eclipse in the Faroe Islands and Svalbard, Norway, and a partial solar eclipse in Europe, northern and eastern Asia, and northern and western Africa. It began at 0741 and ended at 1150 UTC. The full story, including video, is in cyberspace at tinyurl.com/eclipse-balloon-flight. HB9AW is a Switzerland-based 60-meter CW beacon project that sends its call sign at 10 watts out, followed by five dashes, each lasting 5 seconds. The first dash is sent at the same 10 watts, followed by the next at 5 watts, then at 1 watt, 100 milliwatt, and the fifth dash at 10 milliwatts. The HB9AW beacon can be found on 5.291 megahertz, occupying a narrow bandwidth of only about 100 hertz. So far, over 2,000 reports have been received from all over Europe, and the beacon has also been heard in the Americas. Those wishing to send a reception report can do so online at www.hb9aw.ch. On the air, keep an ear open for stations and club stations of Spain's national society, the URE, to use special prefixes through month's end. This to celebrate the 90th anniversary of the formation of the International Amateur Radio Union. During this time frame, EA prefix stations will use the AM90 prefix, EB stations will use AN90, and EC stations will use AO90. Also, URE club stations will activate EG90IARU from the Spanish mainland. EH90IARU/6, 8, and 9 will operate from the Balearic Islands, the Canary Islands, and Ceuta and Melilla, respectively. QSL for EG90IARU and EH90IARU via EA4URE. And be sure to listen up for special event station 3A90IARU in Monaco through June 30th. This station is also in celebration of the 90th anniversary of the International Amateur Radio Union. Operations will be on all bands and modes, QSL via 3A2ARM, direct by the Bureau or electronically using Logbook of the World. NDX VE7NX will be active stroke P4 from Aruba until April 24th. He'll be working mostly CW, but may switch to SSB if requested, QSL via VE7NX. EA5IDQ will be on the air stroke 3B8 from the island of Mauritius between May 10th to the 18th. He then moves to Rodriguez Island and operates stroke 3B9 from May 19th to the 23rd. He plans to be on 40 through 10 meters from both islands using SSB and RTTY. QSLs via EA5IDQ direct or by the Bureau. You can also QSL via Club Logs OQRS. Listen out for J52HF to be operating from Guinea-Bissau through April 30th. The station operator is IZ3BUR. He'll be on 20, 15, 10, and 6 meters during his spare time. Modes of choice are SSB and PSK31. His log will be uploaded to Club Log when he returns to Italy. For more information, including QSL routing, send an email to veronadxteam@gmail.com. And lastly, JA1NLX will once again be active as 3D2YA, but this time from Yangueta Island. This operation will take place between September 23rd to the 28th on 40 through 10 meters using CW, SSB, and RTTY. QSL via JA1NLX direct or via the OQRS that's now set up on Club Log. He adds that he does not send cards via the Bureau. And finally this week, as most ham radio groups were getting ready to celebrate Amateur Radio Day on April 18th, one we know of is looking forward to the 25th. That's part of the Earth Day celebration, and Newsline's own Hal Rogers, KHCMD, is a member of a club holding an operation to commemorate it.
The Parma Radio Club in Parma, Ohio, will celebrate Earth Day with special event station W8PRC on Saturday, April 25th. W8PRC will be on 40 and 20 meters single sideband, powered only by the sun. This event is our way of reminding everyone of the awesome beauty of our planet and the fragility of our resources. More information is on the W8PRC page of QRZ.com and at ParmaRadioClub.webs.com. We would like your QSL, but our distinctive card is available to shortwave listeners and everyone who sends a request. Earth Day is celebrated around the world by more than 192 countries, tens of thousands of organizations, and more than 500 million people. Parma Radio Club encourages hams worldwide to join in the celebration with their own special event. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, from Parma, Ohio, and the Parma Radio Club, this is Hal Rogers, KHCMD.
Earth Day is actually on April 22nd, but is celebrated the entire week here in the United States. Hal and the Parma Radio Club say they hope to catch up with you on the air. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, RAIN, the RSGB, the South African Radio League, the Southgate News, Twit TV, Australia's WIA News, and you, our listeners, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline at arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website. You'll find that at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. Before we go, a reminder that Amateur Radio Newsline is seeking nominations for its 2015 Young Ham of the Year Award. For consideration, a nominee must have used amateur radio in some way that has benefited his or her community or encouraged technological development directly or indirectly related to communications. Nominees must be 19 years or younger, reside in the United States, including Hawaii, Alaska, and Puerto Rico, or any of the Canadian provinces. This individual must also hold a currently valid United States or Canadian amateur radio license. The deadline for submitting an application is May 30th, 2015, and the decision of the judging committee is final. To obtain an application, send a self-addressed stamped envelope to 2015 Young Ham of the Year Award in care of Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. You can also download a form in Microsoft Word format at www.arnewsline.org/YHOTY, clicking on the word here and saving the file to print at a later time. Presentation of the 2015 Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award will take place the weekend of August 15th and 16th at the Huntsville Ham Fest in Huntsville, Alabama. For now, with producers Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF in Los Angeles, Skeeter Nash, N5ASH in Topeka, plus our news team worldwide, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW in South Mississippi, saying 73, and as always, we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2015. All rights are reserved.